Hello and welcome to this special episode of Blood on the Thames, a Vampire the Masquerade 5th edition actual play podcast and livestream. During this very short break between books 1 and 2 of the Chronicle, we're going to release 4 special episodes of the podcast, each detailing the embrace of one of the members of the Coterie. It's worth noting that these were recorded prior to the release of Vampire's 5th edition, and use the 20th anniversary rulebook, for the astute amongst you that noticed that something seems a little odd. However, the events are wholly canonical, and nothing has changed about these characters with the introduction of the new edition.
And finally, welcome to the death of Moises Pineda.
So, which city did he reside in prior to?
Minnesota.
Minnesota, okay. And he worked as...
He finished studying computer science in the University of Minnesota, and then he moved to Duluth, working for the University of Minnesota, computer science for the sea research and the astronomy and all of that. You know, as a graduate from the main campus in Minneapolis.
Cool. Okay. So he just works there.
Yeah. Mostly he's like working there, and that's where he meets. Alice and like liberal arts or whatever.
Okay. Well, it's leading up towards the night in question that you spend a lot of time socializing with Alice and some other individuals. You, the generally social individual that you are, you busy yourself in respective ways that you find the most enjoyable. It can be quite difficult being a student just purely because of the amount of workload involved, but you manage to find the time to socialize with these individuals, and for the while it's good, it's enjoyable, and it's something to motivate you and keep you going. But it's the work hours that you've been doing have gone extended into the night, and you find yourself getting less and less sleep. Not only because of how little time you find yourself getting on a progressive level of how much time you can sleep, but also because what began as a odd occurrence in which you met someone briefly, it's someone that you don't really know, and it's hard to kind of recall their features, when someone came and sat opposite you in a diner, not opposite in a different booth, in your booth, as you were sat there eating alone, you just kind of glanced up, and someone with a baseball cap and kind of the kind of clothes you'd expect someone that's busking or someone that's on the sleep, he just came and sat opposite you and just stared, and there was an uncomfortable moment where you weren't quite certain what this person wanted or wanted to do. But what was your immediate reaction to this individual that's just there staring at you? He's got dark eyes, dark hair that's kind of just stretching down the side of his face, and he's quite a solid build, but he just sits and just stares.
Can I help you?
You don't know how good you've got it, do you?
Sorry, I don't know what you mean. I think you got me confused with somebody else.
No. And he gets up.
Does he look like he wants money or anything? Like
no.
A hobo or
anything? It's not someone that's kind of trying to crowd you. There's the feeling that he's just, there's an intense dislike there, and it's palatable. And
I just go back to my meal. Yeah. I mean, being mixed race, Moses is a Latino descent and moved from the South. Mm. Well, his mother moved from the South to this place, and she remarried. So this is more of a place where he would find someone with like racial connotation. So probably that's what he thinks at the moment. It's like another person that's, you know, like
it's easy for him to kind of just assume that's what it is. And as he goes back to his meal, or you go back to your meal, you feel the intense stare there. And even though you can hear him kind of retreating, it's almost like you feel him still staring. And as you kind of glance around, you catch his eye. And it's that moment of brief eye contact where all assumptions regarding race just filter out. And there's a loathing there that is... it's almost primal. There's something, it's almost like you are someone that has taken everything from this individual, and it's odd, and it's it's confusing and it doesn't make sense and it's frightening and it's angering and it's everything at once, just in this one stare. And as he kind of makes eye contact, he just lowers the cap and steps out, shoulder checking someone on the way out, and just moves off. And this individual just kind of just looks back towards him and just watches him go, and then just moves off into the bar. But even as you kind of track his movements outside of the window, he doesn't look back at you, not again, but it's almost like you can still feel that stare. And then you go back to eating, but you still think of this person. And
anybody else in the diner saw that? Like,
maybe there's a few people that kind of glanced and watched and like noticed, like, but like most people, they look and then their need not to become involved just takes over and they go back.
Maybe trying to cut up on the nerves or like cut them out. I just like make a maybe like a quick remark, like, oh, what is his problem, you know? Like, I don't know, this is team lose, whatever, anything that can get me like sort of a little chuckle so I can calm myself. And it's not, I'm not looking reassurance from them, but I think being the closest, I will try to do that.
I mean, no one immediately smiles or chuckles or stuff, but when a waitress comes over and she asks, you know, offers to pour you a drink, she asks, you know, are you alright?
Yeah. I don't know what was that about.
I'm sorry about that. I mean, we've seen him come through a few times. He hasn't come in, but I'll be sure to let the manager know just in case he wants to.
Not your fault.
No, but if you need anything else, just give me a shout.
I'll whistle.
And she steps away. And that brief moment of kind of contact with someone that's a bit more compassionate just kind of brings you back down. But when you go to sleep that night, you can see, as you close your eyes, that stare. And that feeling like you've wronged someone on a deep level that you just don't know how or why. And that sensation, although the memory of the encounter kind of becomes less clear over time, the sensation whenever you think back to that diner or whenever you pass by, you recall that sensation. And it carries with you for a while, but you don't see this individual again. Even when you risk going past the diner, you check the streets, you speak with the people, passing remark to the waitress just to see whether he's come in again, and he hasn't. This individual's not been seen for a while. And in time it fades from memory, but then after about 3 weeks following, you begin to get the sensation as you're walking home that someone is not necessarily following you, but they have an uncomfortably similar route home to you. And there's a part of you that thinks, okay, this potential, and you begin running through the scenarios in your head, what it could potentially be, and you glance back. And it's only in glancing back that you note the similar crest of the baseball cap that this individual was wearing. And he's walking on the same side of the road as you. There's no hurried pace. But he's following.
I do what I used to do back home when someone from any of the gangs would try to, you know, as a kid recruiting or whatever, just stray away from my path, going into a place that I know it's more, you know, illuminated or more concurrent, even if it's the middle of the night, something that would have people in it, with patrons, anything. Okay. Even if I have to go into a bar.
Okay. You do find there's a convenience store close by. There's a couple of bars as well. And as you kind of step inside, you move to just between the aisles, but you keep an eye towards the door, even as the person that's on the counter who's watching, you can guess is probably a TV behind the counter, even though maybe it's CCTV, but based upon the noise, he's probably watching a game. And he kind of glances over towards you and then just returns to watching the game, just zoning out. But then you look back towards the street and you see him just move past, and then he stops and glances towards you and watches your movements, and then he just turns and just continues on past the window.
Damn. Here's the guy. How's the game going? Brewers are up?
Yeah, for now. Cool. I'm gonna lose some fucking money. Can't get you anything anyway.
Yeah, give me a pack of cigarettes and...
What brand?
Anything. Marlboros. That'll do.
He reaches over and just grabs it and then puts it on.
Pay, go out.
Takes, and almost like absolutely, just still watching the game, just puts it in. And then As he hears the door go, he just glances over just to double check it's not someone new, and just and then you're forgotten. You head back outside.
Yeah. Either way, I'm like a little slightly paranoid. Mm. I'm trying to figure out a route that'll take me back to campus, I think. Campus security or anything. I don't want to alarm the police, but I just don't want to go home. Mm. Especially that guy's following me.
So you begin making your way back towards the campus, and you take a route that you know, but not necessarily the same route you'd normally take.
Oh, there's a phone booth.
There's some that you could that you'd cross at some point between you and the campus.
I call Alice.
Okay,
just to see if she's home.
Okay, it rings a few times, and then it sounds like it's about to go onto the answering machine. But then just as you're preparing to either leave a message or hang up, is you hear the as it's being picked up. Hello?
Alice?
Yeah.
It's me, Moses. I feel stupid now. There was, remember the guy at the diner I told you about? The creepy looking one that was like really odd?
Well, the guy with the baseball cap?
Yeah. He was following, I swear to God he was following me, like, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure. So I'm just going back to campus and to alert campus security, probably call a cab home. I don't want to walk all the way. So I just wanted to let you know I'm not going to be home until later.
What, is he still following you?
No, not anymore. I lost him in the convenience store at this
place. Do you want me to come down? Do you want me to call the police?
Oh, no, hell no. Don't worry about it. I mean, it's just probably someone that has either an axe to grind or one of those weird KKK guy, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, you're mildly freaking me out here.
Well, I am freaking out myself. Don't worry about it. I'm a few blocks away from campus.
Well, you call me when you get to campus. If I don't hear from you, I'm coming down to the... Where are you?
I'm right now, I tell her my address. I'm right now in this place. I'm walking to campus. I'll be there.
All right, well, I'll be waiting for you. You call me when you get there. If I don't see you, I'll come looking for you.
Okay, cool. See you around, girl.
Okay, see you in a bit. She hanged up. Even from the kind of upbeat tone that she normally adopts, there's a moment where there's clear concern there. And as unfortunate as the conversation had to be, with the context it had to be, it's nice that someone's that willing to immediately just, you know, come and find you. And it's that thought that follows you all the way back down to the wood of the campus. You get there and you alert security, you provide a description of this individual. But as you think, and they ask for the description, you get as far as the cap and the long kind of unkept hair. And then it startles you just how hard it is to recall the details about this individual. I mean, you certainly remember the eyes, but it's hard to recall specific details. I mean, even parts of his clothing, you can't remember whether it was a full-length coat, or was it a three-quarter length, or was it a half? Was it just a jacket? Did he have, like, something tied around his waist that made it look longer? It's hard to tell in the dark, but the fact that you're suddenly struggling for details is odd. It's not completely unheard of, but it's just odd, because you, in your mind eye, as you were walking back, you had it pictured perfectly. But now it's almost like you're second-guessing yourself in terms of details. And you provide as adequate descriptions you can, and they assure you they'll keep an eye out, they'll make sure he doesn't come on, and that you just go back doing your thing, give them a shout if you need to, if there's any issues. So what do you do?
I call a taxi.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes me home, and I call Alice.
Okay. So you get the taxi, it arrives pretty promptly, and there's no incidences. You're waiting for it, or during the drive, or when you get back to yours, and you're in your place is still vacant. There's no one there. He's not there. And by this point, you don't feel like anything you've done was wrong so far. You feel a bit, okay, maybe it was just a coincidence, or maybe that guy's just a disgruntled kind of homeless guy, and maybe you were just kind of cutting it out of proportion. It's something that flickers for your mind, as it does whenever someone comes into a situation like that. But as you call Alice, she's immediately answering the phone. So she's probably carried her phone around with her, waiting for you to call. But she's quick to answer.
So yeah, I'm home. I'm home. I'm safe. No one's here. Police got the description. Security. It's all settled.
Okay. And do you want me to come over? I can come straight over.
No, no need. It's kind of late. I had to work tomorrow. Why don't we meet for dinner tomorrow?
Okay, sure. Where? In the usual place?
Yeah.
Let's go to usual time?
Yeah, about 8:15. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, right. Well, if you have any trouble whatsoever, you call me. I'll come straight down.
Okay, cool.
Okay, you promise?
Promise. Come
on. Good. Okay. All right. Well, sleep well and just keep an eye out for the homeless guy, I guess.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll double lock.
Okay. All right. Well, lock your doors. I will see you tomorrow.
See ya.
All right. See you then, Shanks. And despite the encounter again, you sleep surprisingly well. And when you wake up the next day, you feel invigorated. You go about and you go back to the campus, do your bits and pieces. And when you go and see Alice, she's there. She's still clearly concerned, but after getting another set of assurances from you that you're all right and it's all fine, she seems to calm. But every now and again she's checking, almost like, for such a minor thing that you've awarded, she seems very concerned about it, and it's nice. So, what do you think this guy's problem is? Why is he pissed at you?
I have no idea. I was having dinner at the diner. Come on.
What were you having? Maybe he's a vegan.
Oh, I was having a steak. Gotta admit. No, it's okay. Let's just have a couple of beers and let's go dancing.
Okay.
And just put it past us.
Sure.
But if he shows up, I'll point you in the right direction so you can see his face and help me figure out what he looks like.
I can kick his ass for you.
You're so lovely. You're so cute when you get protective.
You're lucky.
Yeah.
You're a lucky guy. Now, you can buy me beers, and then when I get just the right level of drunk, I might not care so much about the consequences and actually get to kick someone's ass for a change.
Okay, that's cool. That's fair enough. I act all surprised. Okay. Just don't start with me.
It's good being around.
Yeah.
She's
like a pocket rocket.
Yeah.
Really cute, but now she's just a nice friend to have.
Yeah. And and having her around, it just makes it a lot easier to just put the whole thing out of your mind. And even the sensation of the darkness of the stare that he afforded you is minor at this point. And then when it comes to the end of the night and you both had a bit to drink, she goes back to hers and, offers you a good night, gives you a hug. And it's clear, again, just before she goes, call me if you, need to.
It's okay.
And then staggers up to her door. You make sure she gets here, and she goes. Where are you going? Where are you going now?
If I had a drink or two, probably not straight home, but using a completely different route, something more scenic, maybe during the walking around the park or whatever. I'm going home, but I'm not using my usual routes, just in case the guy is there.
Okay.
So he's just going around or whatever.
Okay. So you manage to get all the way back down towards your house. You take the different routes. It's surprisingly nice just to be out at night at this time, even with the precautions in place. It's nice. Now, as you finally get back to your door, you step up towards it and then you reach in.
Not again. Downstairs, payphone.
Okay. So you head back down, pull up the payphone.
Probably a neighbor.
Okay.
One of the friends in the neighborhood that has a copy of my keys. If not, Alice must have a copy.
Okay. You take up the phone and lift it to your ear, and there's no dial tone.
Kidding me. Still, at this point, I think I'm more concerned with losing my keys again than with the guy. Mm-hmm. I think the drinks are not helping my case for self-preservation. I walk towards the next payphone that must be a couple of blocks away.
Okay.
And I start just going back that route until I find a payphone. If I'm really far away from the house, I just straight up call Alice to stay at hers.
Okay. You begin making your way to the payphone, and there's an urgency to your step, not because you're concerned, but now just because It's late, you're tired, you're slightly drunk, and you know, you're fucked off. You've left your keys. And you finally start, you locate that other, the phone booth. And then as you step towards it, you realize the light that's inside is just flickering. And then as you're getting close, about to the end of the block, you glance in towards it, and there he is in the phone booth.
Turn around and run.
And he's just watching you move off. And
I see him, I freeze for a second, and I turn around and run. I lose it immediately. Like, I was not expecting him.
As you turn around and you dart off, you move off down towards the end of the street, and where are you going?
Straight.
Okay, so you just keep going.
Straight.
You keep going straight, you're not picking any particular place that you're heading towards, and you just run. And as you glance towards, back over your shoulder, you can see in the distance the glowing, the occasional kind of in and out jerking kind of movement of the light, and the silhouette of him just there, hand up against the glass, just watching you move. And then as you reach the corner, you glance back again, he's not there. And then as you turn the corner and you're still running, the sensation of him just suddenly being there, and the moment of the phone booth being dark and then illuminating and he's there, it's almost something out of a horror movie. And as you keep running, you can see off in towards the distance a familiar road which will take you towards the campus. So you head off, making directly towards the campus. You head straight towards the grounds and move past it. And as you kind of stop and look back, just poised, just there on the edge of safety, you glance back towards the corner, and he's not there. But you almost feel like at any second he can turn that corner. He could be here in a second.
Okay, I just try to calm down, and I start in a little bit of a panic, going around. It's like, okay, where's the payphone, security booth, whatever. You know what will get security? Me climbing a fence, and I start doing that.
Okay, so you move over towards the fence and begin trying to scale it. It's easier to do once you've forced yourself to calm, even though there's still an urgency in everything you're doing, and you reach the pitch of the gate and towards the fence. And as you kind of lift yourself up and over, you glance back towards the street, and as you descend, you just see him just suddenly turn the corner and just look, just appearing in that moment. And in that brief second, he just makes eye contact with you before you drop down onto the other side and land on the campus.
Ouch. I run into the building or whatever is close. Like, I literally look for shelter.
Yeah. There's kind of a place for the artists and the sculptors to try and head in. It's close. It's a
yeah, yeah.
It's not necessarily something that's taught there, but it's something that's just...
No, in Duluth is the School of Fine Arts.
Yeah.
That's where probably I met Alice. So I know this area. I go to the ladies' toilet.
Okay, so you sprint into there and you run in and test the door, and your heart is kind of beating as it struggles, and you think, oh shit, it's fucking locked. And then it suddenly gives and just opens.
Okay, you was unlocked. Okay, cool. I just immediately just go in and run, and I figured, I don't know, maybe stupidly, no one's gonna look for a guy in the girls' room, and I just go into the ladies' room.
Okay, so you rush inside. The lights are still on over the top, and you kind of rush in, and there's numerous booths, and you've got the sinks, you've got the window, and it's confined, and the door shuts behind you. And although you can't see out there, although you can't hear anything, there's something inside you that is simply saying, hide, run. Get away. Hide.
I go inside one of the... I try to lock the door as best as I can, and I just go into one of the stalls, and I just crouch on top of the toilet and lock all.
Okay.
Just stay there and try to calm down and start praying.
And all of a sudden, the light goes out. As the door next to you opens.
Moses.
What do you want?
Open the door, Moses.
It's BC. Come back later.
Open the door, Moses.
And the exterior of the cubicle you're in begins to shake, almost as though someone is physically shaking on the outside, and it's jarring, you being there, shutting your eyes in darkness, and you can just hear as the cubicle around you just shakes, being forcibly moved. Moses, open the door!
Just gather up all of my, you know, strength and, you know, my willpower. And go like, yeah, what? I've taken bullies before. That's my mentality on it, okay? I'm like, okay, let's do this.
Okay.
Just stand out, open the door.
Okay. As you reach and click it, and then you open it, and then the shaking, which stopped the moment you clicked it, you open it and there's no one there. Even in the dark, you can just see the brief silhouette of the thin light that's coming in through the upper windows that kind of run the store. You can just see yourself in the reflection opposite. And as you kind of look, he's not there. He's not against the wall. And as you look back towards the door, he's not there either.
I'm just pumped myself. I just spawned myself in this one. It was like, okay, now who's hiding, puto? Where the fuck are you? Ah, cabrón. Just turn around, start walking out.
As you start moving towards the door, you hear from behind you.
A pivot. Twist, turn around, run, and throw the most heroic, it's gonna look pathetic, punch at his face.
Okay.
Like, I'm literally running towards him to punch him.
You turn around and you... There's no one there.
Oh, por Dios, I'm going crazy.
And then just as you're lowering your fist, the end cubicle just flies open. And then the next one flies open. And then you can kind of see in the brief blink, there was no one there. But now there is a guy there with a baseball cap that's just opening the door. And as he lifts it, you suddenly feel your stomach clench and drop as the individual that is there is not only pale white, the long hooked nose, the hair that string like hanging down the side of this gaunt, almost skeletal face, a jaw that's hanging impossibly long with long teeth just jagged and eyes which are bent and twisted at an angle just staring at you, and long, really impossibly long and slender limbs, and this hat that is just unevenly edged upon a face which is, it's unsymmetrical and it's unnerving, and he's just turning and looking at you.
Moses.
My cross, whatever. And I start just, what the fuck are you?
And he just lunges towards you. And the moment that you kind of step back and lift your cross, he grabs hold of it, wrenches it bodily away from you, and then grabs your throat with the other arm and lifts you bodily up off the floor. And you can feel the pressure of this grip tightening around your neck, and the long nails on these crooked fingers just burrowing into the back of your neck as he just tightens. And they're in that gaze that you cannot look away from, despite the absolute horror and hideousness of what you're staring at. The crookedness of this jaw, which is just moving in and out, in and out, in and out. The hatred that you felt before is just there. And as he kind of lifts you closer, you can smell an impossibly grotesque, rotting scent that, although he doesn't breathe, it's almost like it's being pushed outwards away from him. And you find yourself choking, not just because of the pressure on your throat, but because of the scent. And as you kind of struggle, the grip just tightens and you feel your eyes just kind of blurring. And then all of a sudden, the pressure vanishes as you feel yourself being thrown bodily towards the remaining cubicle, and you smack through it, taking the door off as you kind of land on a heap on a mixture of porcelain and a broken door. As you look up at this figure that is just in the doorway, his hands pressed on either side, just staring at you, and his head almost seems to lower further down his body as he bends and looks at you, and his legs just coil, and then his hands against the wall just scratch down.
Moses.
What did I do to you? What did I do to you?
You took everything. Every one of you takes everything. And I'm gonna show you what it feels like, Moses. I'm gonna show you what it feels like. I'm gonna break you, Moses!
And he lunges towards you and grabs hold of you, wrenching aside your neck and just bites. And although there is a deep pleasure that just spasms through your body, it's overridden by the forcefulness of the way he bites into you. And the elongatedness of his jaw means that not only do you feel your flesh give way and the blood begin to pool against your neck, it also clamps down on your torso and you feel puncture wounds go in towards the side, and your body feels rigid and spasms, and as you kind of reach towards him, you feel parts of his fabric just falling away, revealing more of this grey mottled flesh. And at one point, from the mixture of spasms from pain and pleasure, you grip into flesh that just slowly rips, and your eyes just begin to blur as you just fall away, and you can just hear a gurgling as he just slurps and slurps, and your body begins going cold and your vision begins to blur, and then there's nothing. You're not sure how long it passes, but then when you wake, you kind of spasm out, almost expecting him to still be there, that weight pressing down on you. But even though he's not there, there's a weight, and you are where you were a moment ago again, leaning on top of this crippled door in a blackened place. And as your hands kind of go, you feel dried blood. And as it comes away and you look upon yourself, the first thing you notice as the kind of panic begins to mount and then fade and then mount and then fade, is your flesh is grey, pale. And then as you kind of step forward, you feel a sharp pain going into your side that kind of buckles you, and as you kind of in shock, there's nothing that follows that inhale, and then it suddenly dawns on you, you're not breathing. And as you kind of force yourself in a panic to breathe, to try and getting oxygen that you are so desperately certain you need, it suddenly fades. And as you force yourself to try and adhere and calm, you stop breathing. But you're still awake, you're still alert, you don't feel like you're suffocating. And that in itself is terrifying. And you're not blinking. Your eyes don't feel moist, and everywhere you're looking, you're not blinking. You force yourself to blink repeatedly, trying to reassure yourself that you're all right. And as you kind of pick yourself up, you see the deep indentations on either side of the door where this thing had indented into it. And the cross that was on your chest is now on the opposite side of the cubicle where it had been tossed by whatever the hell this thing was.
I just crawl to it. I grab it. Thanks.
And then,
God for saving me.
As you lean back and you start praying, that pain grips you again and the cross just tumbles away. And on top of the deep pain that's going in your side, you feel a tight kind of ball build. And it's an immediate and sharp and unforgivable and incessant pain that feels as though every part of your torso is being forced inwards, impossibly tight. And just when you think it can't get any tighter, it tightens even more. And your spasming is almost like you're having a fit. But then as you reach out and you grab hold of the sink to try and steady yourself, without meaning to put as much force from the spasm, you yank it down off the wall and it just crumbles to your side. And as you kind of look at it and look at your hand, there's a bit of porcelain which is jagged in, but as you kind of absently just pull it out, there's no blood pooling. And that in itself horrifies you. And then that pain in your stomach intensifies and then spreads along your limbs. And as you look at your flesh in your arms, it's almost like it begins to wriggle and move. And it feels like your flesh is tightening and then burning and then cooling and then burning and then stretching.
This guy drugged me. I'm hallucinating. Grab my cross, straight to the hall, to the student hall.
Okay. As you're rushing towards the door to get out of the toilet, you realize that it's locked. And as you fiddle with the lock, it's not moving. You feel like it's turned, but then you try and push it and you realize that the door itself has almost been barred from the other side, or blocked from the other side, and you're shaking it in your eagerness to get out. And that claustrophobic feeling that you cannot get out, being suppressing it, and combining with the pain in your stomach and the feel as though needles are being driven in your skin, you glance towards the mirror as you're twisting, and you notice that one of your eye sockets is just beginning to lower and lower, and you can just see your eyeball. It is almost as though it's just being held there, and your ear is beginning to droop. And as you notice it, your whole flesh begins to feel as though it's on fire, and that pain intensifies. And then you hear something, which even over the pain, you cannot ignore. And you glance towards the door and you hear, "You're right in there!
Let me out.
Hang on." And there's a struggle as something's being moved away from the door and something's being twisted, and suddenly the door opens, and then you're flooded with a smell that overrides everything else. And it's enticing, it's delicious, it's all you can think about. And you can see an individual stood in the doorway. The framework of him silhouetted against this backlight suggests in your hazy vision that this is one of the security. And as you kind of open your mouth to try and say something, your mouth is filled with a single sound that seems to reverberate through you. What the fuck happened in here? Are you all right? And he moves over to try, and just as he kind of touches you on your shoulder and tries to move you back, he sees your face, and there's the fear suddenly spreading through his eyes, the same fear that you felt yourself moments before mirrored in his expression. And as he kind of backpedals slightly away from you, all you can see is and he begins reaching towards a radio that he tries to pull off from his belt. But just the moment he starts lifting and he turns away, just glancing back towards you, just shock kind of overrided purely by whatever training he's received, he turns away from you, and involuntarily your hands knuckle as you lift yourself and you lunge. And then the darkness engulfs you as your eyes just snap shut and you feel a warmth flood you. And that pain, that nestling deep pain in your stomach, just lessens slightly and slightly. The pain in your flesh is still there, but it's muted, almost overrided by this euphoria that's flooding through you. And then, as you kind of open your eyes, you're looking in the mirror, and you see what you're doing. Your face is pitched over the neck of this guard, whose eyes are fluttering, almost in a fitful state, his arm twisting, with the radio having fallen free from his fingers and just clattered on the ground. And you're biting him, and your maw is bloody, and your lips are slowly receding, just revealing these sharp incisors which are half buried in flesh. And you make eye contacts with eyes which are hauntingly similar to the ones that you saw before you were attacked. And you see you biting down on this guy.
I just close my eyes and twist the body away. I still feel.
Okay.
I need this.
And that's, I wanna see it. That sensation of the pain just slowly ebbs. And right towards the end, it's still there. But it's dulled. And even though the pain flooding through the rest of your body is still there, you still feel like you're on fire, you still feel like there's worms under your flesh, like something is needling you. It's manageable.
For now.
And we will leave it there.
Thank you for listening to this special episode of Blood on the Thames. We really hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed making them. If you want to watch us playing live and interact with the cast, find us on Twitch at 7 p.m. UK time every Monday. Follow us on Twitter for latest updates, but most importantly, thank you. We couldn't do this without you.